Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Thursday, July 24th, welcome, welcome, welcome to the show. I'm Cherry Gregg.
Triple welcome. I'm Avi Wolf-Manarit.
And today on the show, you probably know what inspired it. That Kiss Cam at a California Coldplay concert that captured a CEO and an HR executive in a telling embrace, followed by, dare I say it, a guilty reaction that created a viral moment that has since exploded into a public reckoning or discussion about infidelity. For days, people have been obsessed with this couple. The CEO has since resigned and deleted his ex account. And, you know, a lot of it is from the public shaming. And that video has been seen around the world. And it got us here at Studio 2 thinking about why cheating hits such a nerve, even when it doesn't really happen to us. So what is it about infidelity that gets us so mad, that, you know, makes us giggle and has so many mixed reactions? And so that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to pull back the covers on modern infidelity. We're going to talk about what cheating looks like in 2025, why it happens, and whether a relationship can truly heal once the trust is broken. And let me just tell you, today is a listener engagement show. We want to hear from you. Our questions of the day are this: have you ever experienced infidelity in a relationship? And what counts as cheating to you? And if you've ever cheated, this is a safe space. You can also call, talk about the results of that experience and what you learned. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, keep those comments and those experiences. You can lay it all out in the live chat.
Yeah, and we're not going to do, hopefully, the TT haha
version
of this.
No, TT haha.
Which is my way of encouraging folks who have gone through this, if you feel comfortable opening up about it. I think it could be useful for everybody. Of course, you can submit anonymously as well, because we know it is really, really personal. But we're hoping, like Cherry said, this will be a safe space this hour. 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. One way we know that cheating has a real hold on us culturally is that there's a lot of art about cheating, specifically a lot of songs about cheating.
Lots of songs.
So today's Thursday, DJ of the day Thursday. We will end the show today with a song picked by one of you about the topic of the show. Email your submissions to producer Paige at studio2@whyy.org. That's studio2@whyy.org.
A lot of themes to choose from today.
Yeah. Cheating, relationships, intimacy, etc. So studio2@whyy.org is the email. Before all that, let's get to our troika of local news stories, starting with this one that revolves around a site just down the street from us, Cherry.
Yeah.
On the eve of America's 250th birthday, the Trump administration may try to scrub some history from the displays on Independence Mall, specifically text and images that address the history of slavery. Earlier this year, President Trump told the National Park Service to flag any displays that, quote, inappropriately disparage Americans past or living, including persons living in colonial times. Now, the New York Times got a hold of internal documents, and in those documents, it shows what displays National Park Service staff have started to flag, and several of them are on Independence Mall, and these could possibly be removed. They include an exhibit on the site where George Washington lived as president, right next to the Liberty Bell display. This exhibit honors 9 enslaved people who Washington brought to Philadelphia from Mount Vernon. Parts of that have been flagged for review. And there's others that have been flagged as well. A lot of them, again, revolving around the topic of slavery.
Yeah, I remember when I was a reporter, I covered some of the local efforts to make sure that perspectives, the lives, contributions of enslaved people, and even women were included in American history, including at the President's House, which is one of the sites that is mentioned in this reporting. I also covered efforts to remove the name of slave owners or segregationists from buildings. And what sort of resonates with me is sort of the subjective nature of the scrutiny on both sides of the aisle, like how this topic has become so political. And I think what we all want as Americans is to sort of have a history that is reflective of everybody's
experiences. What actually happened.
Yeah, and what actually happened. So, I mean, we're all going to be watching this. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's just, I remember those cultural moments. I know you do too, Avi, when it was this push and pull over the contents of actual American history.
And I will point out the executive order that set all of this into motion calls out Independence Hall by name. Yeah. So it's no surprise that they ended up flagging. They were clearly zeroing in on this site in Philadelphia from the get-go. You can read through the language of the executive order, and it was forecast pretty clearly.
Yeah. Story number two, a Pennsylvania senator is going to be soon introducing a bill that would create safety regulations around the use of electric scooters. The bill is called Abby's Law, and it's named after a 12-year-old girl by the name of Abby Gillen, who was killed just last month when she and her friend were thrown from an e-scooter into oncoming traffic in Aston, Delaware County. Abby died from her injuries. The friend spent weeks in the hospital recovering. Abby's Law would regulate e-scooters as micro-mobility devices, that is, electronic devices that can go up to around 30 miles per hour. It would require helmets, depending on age, and would also raise awareness about the safe operation of those devices. And by the way, the number and the sales of e-scooters have skyrocketed over the past few years, as has the number of injuries. And those injured are more likely than not to be under the age of 18. And many of them are not wearing helmets because, you know, you just get one, you give one to your kid for Christmas.
Yep.
And they're not in Pennsylvania. You cannot ride them on the sidewalk. And so you're kind of forced to ride in traffic. And it's okay, I guess, if you have bike lanes like in Philadelphia, but it can be really dangerous. And some counties have even been talking about banning them, especially for kids, because they can be so dangerous and because of the large number of injuries.
Yeah, I understand the impulse to ban. However, I would say that writ large, scooters, e-bikes, et cetera, these micro-mobility devices could be part of the solution to decarbonizing our planet, our transportation systems, and also just helping people get around dense areas. So there's a lot of potential there. It does seem like the adoption of the technology is out ahead of the safety culture around them. And that's not surprising because, as you mentioned, the number of e-bikes and e-scooters has really risen dramatically in a short period of time. So I don't know about this specific law. I'll let people judge the merits of this specific law. But it does make sense to me to start to have a broader legislative and cultural conversation about how these are used. Because, like I said, there's a lot of potential with them, too. And cars are certainly not blameless in this scenario. So I caution against going straight to the ban because there's a lot of potential here too, and it can be a helpful way for people to get around.
And I think people, if you just get a helmet, you know, talk about safety, you know, and people tend to drink more on these types of devices. So it's just like certain precautions you can take to keep people safe,
which includes limiting where cars can go and how cars can drive.
Exactly.
Speaking of cities. Pollster YouGov recently asked Americans for their views about the country's major cities. The city viewed most favorably by Americans is Nashville, Tennessee.
Nashville.
According to this poll.
I wonder why.
But Philadelphia did all right.
Okay.
Philadelphia had a plus 22 net favorability rating in this poll, which was second in the Northeast, right behind Boston. Philly was one of the most popular cities among Democrats. Plus 51 favorability. But here's what really surprised me, Cherry. Republicans actually had a net favorable view of Philadelphia.
A little bit.
I was surprised by that. I was genuinely surprised by that because Republicans were very negative about some other large cities like LA, Chicago, DC, Detroit, and Baltimore. Philly, Republicans seem at least lukewarm. So any thoughts on that or about this poll in general? I'm kicking it to you.
I thought it was interesting. I mean, you know, Philly, you know, but we did a show recently where we included a topic of discussion about people having a favorable view of Philly. And we were very surprised at how
that was
much
Philadelphians
love this city. Yeah. So I guess I'm not really surprised that people on both sides of the aisle like Philadelphia.
What do you think about Nashville being number one?
I have never been to Nashville, but we're going this fall. And it was funny, before the show, I said, Avi, didn't you go to Nashville? And I thought you loved it. And your face was like...
Here's my review of Nashville.
Okay, review.
I went for the first time in December.
Mm-hmm.
Meh.
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 M-E-H.
It felt like a southern version of L.A. mixed with sort of the nightlife culture of Las Vegas. A lot of people go there to party, which is not really my thing. A lot of the people walking around are like 25 years old and look like they just stepped out of a catalog. They're clearly there to try to make it in something. And yeah, that's just, it's just not my scene.
You didn't get the Nashville
vibe. It's just not my scene. Mm-hmm. There were some nice things about it, and I do love the history of country music and the museum and all that stuff, but it wasn't my favorite city in the world, and I did not like the layout of it either. So I give it a meh. However, I am curious what your favorite American city is outside of Philadelphia, because I have a strong take on this.
Well, I had three that I listed: Atlanta, San Diego, and Austin, Texas. By the way, I will say they're all three liked by people on both sides of the aisle. Wonderful cities.
My number one by a mile outside of Philly: New Orleans, Louisiana.
Yeah, that is a great city.
I love New Orleans.
That
food,
is a great city.
The culture. Yes, it's touristy, but unlike Nashville, it also has character and history behind it.
Yeah.
Like, there's a soul there. I love New Orleans. I could go to New
Orleans.
New Orleans
is a great city.
Over and over. It's one of the few American cities, I would say, that is actually unique. A lot of American cities are pretty alike. New Orleans is actually its own thing.
And it has
its own thing.
All the things. Food, culture, history. Beautiful city. You're right. And so today, stick with us, because we're going to be talking about infidelity. Have you ever experienced infidelity? And what counts as cheating to you? Studio2@WHYY.org. We'll be right back.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
And welcome back to Studio 2 here in Philadelphia. Not New Orleans, but it'll be great in either city. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Nobody said it was easy. It's such a shame for us to part. Those words from Coldplay's Chris Martin capture the pain of a relationship as it frays. These words from Coldplay's Chris Martin at a recent concert may have unleashed that exact kind of pain.
Oh, look at these two. All right, come on. You're okay? Oh, what? Either they're having an affair or they're just very shy. Ooh,
ooh. And you probably know the backstory by now. A Jumbotron camera at a Coldplay concert captures a CEO and his colleague engaging in apparent infidelity. The internet goes wild. But why?
Why did this clip fill people with such apparent glee? Why does infidelity feel so hurtful and embarrassing? And what do we get wrong when we talk about cheating or when we try to work through it in a relationship?
Well, let's ask the experts. Justin Lay Miller joins us via Zoom. He is a senior research fellow at the Kinsey Institute and host of the podcast Sex and Psychology. Justin, great to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And here in studio, let's welcome Shadeen Francis, marriage and family therapist and board certified sex therapist. Hello, Shadeen.
Hi, good to be here.
Yes, and this is really a listener engagement show, so we want to encourage all of our listeners, whether you're listening at home or elsewhere, to call in and participate, join the conversation. Our questions of the day are this: have you ever experienced infidelity in a relationship? What counts as cheating to you? And if you have cheated, we'd love to hear about your experience and what you learned. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, put those comments in the live chat.
All right, this is kind of a long comment from James, but I want to read it because it might help us set a different course than we might have otherwise gone down with this conversation. So here's what James had to say. I once was in a very long-term abusive relationship that carried on for nearly a decade, and I barely escaped from it both mentally and physically. Toward the end, I began cheating on my partner at the time to try to find an escape from the physical and emotional abuse. It eventually led me out of the abusive relationship and into a happy marriage and back to a stable life. I don't condone wanton cheating and infidelity, but in my situation, it saved me. Yeah. So there's a lot more to this than maybe meets the eye for some. Let me backtrack to the Coldplay video that everyone's talking about with both of you, though, because like we're viewing that from our position as just like people on the internet. You guys are viewing it as professionals. So Shadeen, when you saw that start to circulate, where did your mind go?
I immediately thought about our relationship to story and particularly horror. Mm. You know, why can't we look away from experiences like these? And that was one of the questions that's already come up. You know, why are we so fascinated with the inner workings of other people's lives, especially when it comes to something like an affair? And it does the same thing that any other good horror does, right? Mm-hmm. That there is some element of shadow that it's showing us. It's allowing us to confront our fears in some way. And for many people, this is one of the scariest things that could happen to you in a relationship. It's being betrayed, and now it's on a public forum.
Wow, I love that, because that's where our minds started to go on second and third day. But mm-hmm. the fact that it happened to you immediately just shows, like, with people who think about this stuff, you often have a more advanced understanding of it. And Justin, I'll get your same thoughts. Like, you see this video, it's going crazy, everyone's making fun of it. Well, a lot of people making fun of it. What were you thinking?
Yeah, you know, I saw this video popping up in my social feed constantly, and at first I didn't really pay much attention to it. But after a few times seeing it, I was like, what is this all about? And as I dove deeper into the story, I started to be really fascinated by it because it was getting so much attention. And I was wondering, you know, what is it about this particular instance of infidelity that seems to be making it stand out in the minds of so many people? And I think it's just really kind of an extraordinary situation, because these individuals in this video were not household names. You know, they're not people that many people in the world know of. And so why are they caring so much about their infidelity? And I think it's because, you know, it was highlighted at this very popular concert on social media. And it's a case where there's a CEO and basically the head of HR having an affair together. And it's just kind of a lot of layers of taboo in this very public situation. And then it was really the shame reaction that they had when they were caught on the kiss cam that I think is what really stands out for so many people, because you could see how mortified they were that this had happened. And I think that's what made it so captivating for the audience.
And I think that's the part that stood out to me, this automatic shame that they both felt almost immediately together and tried to duck. And that actually what made it stand out to everybody even more. But I want to take a moment and just level set so that we all, you know, have a clear understanding when we talk about cheating, what we're talking about, because I feel like the rules of what infidelity means has sort of shifted now in the modern age. If we all agree that physical, you know, stepping outside a relationship in a, you know, physically could be cheating, there are other ways, though, that you could cheat. And Shadeen, if you could kind of just walk us through like some of the many ways, because I think different relationships, different people may have different definitions of what we're talking about.
Yeah, that point at the end there, I think, is really significant when we talk about this, how subjective it has now become, that there were times, a simpler time, if you will, at which we had maybe more common understandings of what relationship boundaries are. But as we continue to innovate and make our lives more complex, we also blur all of these boundaries. So yes, we do tend to have a general understanding that in a monogamous, sexually exclusive relationship, to have a sexual experience with someone else is to breach the contract. We also have all of these areas of gray, even right there, right? What is considered a sexual experience? If I like an erotic photo of someone else online, did I just have an erotic experience with someone else? If I'm talking with a chatbot, where does that fall in the boundaries? If I take someone else to what we might have considered our place, is that a form of cheating, right? We've got all of these co-occurring contracts that we're trying to negotiate when we think of when you enter into a relationship. And if this is a marriage, it's even more so, because we've got our agreements to one another. We've got our agreements to our community. We've got an agreement to the government. And to many people, we now also have an agreement to God.
Mm. Yeah, that's many levels. And Justin, I want you to add to this, because I know you've done a lot of research on this topic. Like, what have you found? Where are the agreements as far as like where people sort of draw that line?
Yeah, so earlier this year, we conducted a nationally representative survey of 2,000 single American adults at the Kinsey Institute in partnership with datingadvice.com. And what we found, we were looking at what do people today consider to be cheating. What we found there was that there is not 100% agreement on anything. You know, people largely agree that having a physical sexual interaction with somebody who's not your partner is cheating, but they also count a lot of things like developing an emotional attachment to somebody else, sharing secrets with another person, right? So emotional infidelity is a big thing. There's also financial infidelity. Like if you're spending money in a way that your partner wouldn't approve of, that can also be a form of cheating. And I think, you know, that's an interesting thing to talk about in this era where we've got legalized sports betting, you know, kind of growing throughout the country, and lots of people are gambling more than they otherwise would have in the past. And that's starting to create issues in some people's relationships.
I think in the survey, 28% of respondents said sharing secrets with someone else counts as infidelity. That 28% is not an insignificant number.
No.
So it's a little bit all over the place. And I think my sense is it's just getting more complicated with technology, with chatbots, with AI, with whatever else, whatever technological advancement you want to throw out there. But still at the core of it, there is something about this particular betrayal that just feels different. And I want to get, you kind of started to talk about that, Shadeen, in your first answer, that there's something, there's lots of ways to betray someone. The social contract is vast. It's not just around marriage or relationships, but something about this one feels different. Can you help us zero in on why we all, and I think we all feel that, why this particular betrayal feels like maybe the ultimate one?
Yeah. So we have cultural scripts around this, yeah. Right? That when we see or hear of someone cheating, there is a huge public outcry. And so we internalize that. But I think the thing that is honest to what people are feeling is that it wounds us on a number of different levels, right? That we think about the emotional piece. I trusted you. And our relationships also help us see and understand ourselves in some way. For example, like, it's hard to know that you're a generous person if there's no one for you to play that out with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there is a way in which being in relationship to others also teaches us about ourselves. And so when you betray how I understand you and how I understand our relationship, it also changes how I see myself. And to say a little bit more about that piece, I think also a thing that makes this unique is that when we have an affair, this is a betrayal that now also involves at least one other person or entity.
Yeah.
I say entity now because of our relationship to digital space.
Yeah.
And so now we've also added this element of comparison. So it's not just you've betrayed my trust, it's that you've betrayed my trust with and or for someone else.
Yeah.
That you maybe value above me.
Yeah. What does that say about me if you would hurt me in relationship to this other person?
Yeah.
And so we've got all of these layers coexisting, and it is incredibly wounding for people.
I want to read this comment from Christine.
Yeah, sent an I was email. Just going to go there.
I mean, Christine says, I'm 1 year out from my almost ex-husband cheating on me with our neighbor and former friend. I knew something was up between them and even brought it to his attention, but he didn't admit it until confronted. They are still together, and I moved back to our previously shared home in a different town. The worst, he still won't admit they're together. I still feel betrayed, sad, and angry. And I want to sort of explore that a little bit more, Shadeen, because the feeling that right under your nose, right? And Christine talked about it being a neighbor, a friend. Mm-hmm. A lot of times you know this person. And I even think about the couple caught in that video. I mean, they worked there. There were people around them. Maybe their spouses or ex-spouses. You know, can you talk about that? The knowledge of other people too, and the fact that this person knew you, and how that kind of can layer on the that feeling of inadequacy.
Yeah, that always makes it worse, right? That as much as when harm happens to us, we want more information about like what happened and who was involved. the more details we have, quite often they don't help us. And when it is someone we knew on the other side of this betrayal, now I'm being betrayed by multiple people, right? Most people feel differently when it was a stranger, someone who had no connection to me. There's sort of this sense of a different kind of social contract. Like, yes, we have our views about marriage and relationships and boundaries, but when you know me personally and you would still engage in this way, right, that it feels like, oh, not, I wasn't just betrayed by my spouse or my partner. I was also betrayed by my friend, by my peers, by my community, by people who maybe have been in my home, by people who I have relationships with or might need to in the future. And so this wounding is magnified and is more public.
Yeah. And the public nature really spilled over with this particular incident because it went mega public. And a lot of people have an issue with that in our comments. Penny on YouTube says, I find the reactions and continued chatter about it mean-spirited. Mind your business. An anonymous listener says, it is so devastating to me that the wrong spouses are not being more thoughtfully considered in the ribald, pithy jokes and memes poking fun at the cheaters. Yes, there is a degree of humor in the shock factor of being publicly outed, but I feel like the fact that two family units were devastated in one fell swoop is being lost in the glee of our rubbernecking. Well put. Justin Laymiller, maybe there's not really a great way to answer this, but we have been talking about what happened and our reaction to it in the context of society. And I think we're sort of saying American society under our breaths without really saying it. Are there differences among countries, among cultures in the way like the public would view cheating or infidelity? Or is this kind of an open question research wise?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly some research cross-culturally looking at sexual attitudes and also looking at infidelity. And we do see there is quite a bit of variability. You know, it's going to vary based upon factors like the level of religiosity within a given country in terms of the degree to which infidelity is seen as kind of being a major transgression or not. So in countries that do have a stronger percentage of the population that are religiously affiliated and hold values that infidelity is kind of this ultimate moral transgression, you're going to see, you know, very negative attitudes toward it in that case.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah. And by the way, I want to encourage our listeners to call in and to email in. Thank you for folks who are sending in those emails. The questions of the day are this: have you ever experienced infidelity in a relationship? What counts as cheating to you? The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, drop those comments in the live chat. Anthony emails, I have personally cheated in all my relationships I have been in. Even thinking I am monogamous and want that, I always tend to fail. In the moment, I have no bad feeling towards it other than hurting my partner. This has made me realize that I am better single, so I don't hurt anyone else. And so, Shadeen, I want to kind of go into the mind of the person cheating, because we did think about the, you know, because I saw some comments online and talked about, like, even they must be feeling the level of shame that they are bringing into their families and on their partners who don't know about this, being exposed in such a public way, losing, having to leave their job. I mean, can you talk about what goes through people's minds when they do decide to breach that contract with their partner?
Yeah, it's layers of things. And the other way that this question often comes up is like, why do people cheat?
Yeah, why?
Right? Why do this? And sometimes the rebuttal, especially from people who have been hurt, are like, why don't they just leave their partners? Like, if they want to be, you know, out there in the world, like, leave us alone. And what is often happening, or the context of sort of the why, the best that we can distill amongst all of these, you know, unique personal experiences, is that there is almost always an unmet need or an unexplored area of self or an appealing unknown met with opportunity. It is almost never like a premeditated plan. I am seeking to betray, or I am seeking to create harm, right? These are usually personal wrestlings. So I am dissatisfied, or I am curious, or there is something I am looking for within that no longer feels like I can figure it out here.
Yeah.
And so I try and find it out there. And sometimes that comes in the form of a person or a partner. Sometimes it's an experience. Sometimes it's a conversation. But it has breached whatever agreements we've explicitly or implicitly made.
Yeah, I do wonder, do people tend to bring this up with their partner? And maybe, Justin, you can add to that. I mean, before you do that, do you even think about it? Or does it just sort of happen? I'm just wondering.
What's the it?
Yeah.
What's the it? Yeah.
You're saying?
No, I mean, is the searching that you're talking about?
Oh, the Shanine, searching. Got
the
it.
Searching that you're talking about. Is there a thought before to say, hey, you know, I'm looking for something, partner, let's discuss this? Or does the infidelity just sort of happen and evolve down that space? I apologize for not being clear.
I understand. Thank you for also clarifying that. And I want to invite Justin into this piece as well, because I'm curious if there is data to this. I'll speak sort of experientially.
Yeah.
That is protective, right, of your relationship. To say, hey, I'm feeling something, and including your partner in that, they don't have to figure it out for you, but at least letting them know, like, hey, something is shifting for me, or something is feeling not fulfilled in me, and I want you to know that. That is a way that we continue to hold accountability in our relationships, but also keep the other person involved. Because one of the biggest pain points of the betrayal is the secrecy.
Yeah. Let me read this comment from Janice, who says, I'm listening to your program right now and wondering perhaps that people aren't really obsessed with the Coldplay incident, but social media algorithms keep promoting it to us because scandal begets more attention. And perhaps by focusing on it today on your program, you're playing into that whole cycle. I think it's a possibility, right? Justin, we have to acknowledge that there is probably something to, like, just the way social media works. I think you can't isolate that as the sole cause. I think people clearly are interested in this. But I don't know if you have a take on that, Justin.
Yeah, I mean, it's in part the algorithms promoting things that they know that people are going to watch. And once this gained so much traction initially, it just makes sense that it was going to continue to explode from there. But I want to go back to your previous question about infidelity and kind of like how this happens and plays out. Because what we see in the research is that it's not a linear path and that it looks different for different people. You know, in some relationships, we see that some people really try and work on the relationship first if there's a problem in it. And when that problem doesn't get addressed or solved, or they're not getting buy-in from their partner, sometimes that is what prompts cheating and infidelity. Other times it's something that just happens spontaneously and is totally unexpected, like you're traveling for work and you just have a few drinks at a bar, meet someone, and it just happens. And, you know, it otherwise wouldn't have if it hadn't been for that specific unique context or circumstance. And then also a lot of times cheating, more often than not, involves somebody that you already know, right? So most of the time people are cheating, it's with a known person. It's not with some random stranger. You know, like I said, the work trip thing can happen, but more often than not, it's somebody you know.
It's proximity. Yeah. We have an anonymous listener who emailed, I'm a former cheater. My then husband was completely inattentive. Later on, I realized he was more interested in the man I cheated with than he was with me. I know cheating is wrong. It's a betrayal of trust. And if there's no trust in a marriage, it won't last. I didn't realize he was still angry. Turns out he thought I was intimate with every man whose name I'd mentioned, even people at work that I didn't care for. So,
wow.
Yeah, I know.
That's so interesting. And so we might not have time before the break to get all the way into this. But okay, we're acknowledging that sometimes people cheat because there's something fundamentally unsound in their relationship. There's a weakness there in the foundation. Okay. And it might even be that the other partner is really contributing quite a bit to the weakness in that foundation. But then you have to have the conversation with this cheated on person.
Oh, no.
And like, how do you actually do that without turning it on to them being like, you got cheated on, and by the way, you're to blame for it? Like, I don't even know how you begin to have that conversation. We do have to save it for the other side of the break.
Yeah.
Well, let's just meditate on that for a second, because it still feels kind of unfair. But maybe there's a fair way to go about doing it, right? So email your thoughts, studio2@whyy.org. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. We are asking you, have you ever experienced infidelity in a relationship? What counts as cheating to you? If you're on YouTube, by the way, keep the comments coming in the chat. We'll be right back on Studio 2.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron. If you're just joining us, we've been talking this hour about infidelity, how couples define it, why it hurts so much, and what happens in the aftermath of an affair or casual cheating.
Marriage, family, and sex therapist Shadeen Francis is in our Philadelphia studio. Also joining us via Zoom is Justin Lehmiller, a Kinsey Institute senior researcher and host of the podcast Sex and Psychology.
Have you ever experienced infidelity in a relationship? What counts as cheating to you? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube, drop a comment in the chat. So, Shadeen, you heard my question on the before the break. Like, how do we productively have that conversation if the person cheats on someone and then says, look, one of the reasons I cheated is because, like, you, my partner, you weren't paying me any attention or you were undermining me in some way. How do we productively have that conversation in the, sort of the postmortem?
Yeah, I think it's really important for people to be clear the difference between context and cause.
Yeah.
Mm. Right? That this was the context that led to the choices that I made or part of the context, right? It is not the cause because we still have choice.
Yeah.
And that sort of tension around how do we hold accountability while also talking about an unmet need is just really hard. I mean, that's why therapy continues to exist in part, right? Yeah. Like, these are really difficult tensions to hold. And so there isn't like a universal, like, this is how you do it, but that is the best sort of nugget I can offer for
that's
how
a structure
we pick
to approach
this up.
It.
And yeah. Tell me the difference, context versus cause. Break that down.
Yeah, that even though this is a part of the environment that led to why I made this choice, it's reductive and often a little blaming, which is what you're talking about, Avi, to say, like, this is why I did it.
Yeah.
Because
plainly, you're removing agency from yourself.
Yeah,
and
you still had options, even if you exhausted the options that you could come up with. I imagine that if we were to crowdsource, which is what the internet does for us, right, that we could brainstorm any number of alternatives that might have still been hurtful or painful, but might not have been this.
Yeah.
I want to ask you this question, Shadeen, and then I'd love to get some data on this, Justin. Do people tend to disclose if they did cheat, for example? Is it better to disclose or not? And I ask you this because Matt from Norristown says he doesn't think anyone would admit to cheating. And he said, just a guess, I'm thinking the results of the question are going to be 100% never cheated, right?
Which he's wrong about, by the way, because
some people clearly admitted it. But I wonder, and I heard this comment once, that if someone cheated, and let's say they planned to never do it again and it was over, that it was actually selfish and mean to disclose that to your partner to clear your own conscience. And I just wonder, is it right to disclose? Like, should you disclose in all cases? Can you talk us through that?
Mm-hmm. So this is one of those questions that is really rooted in, like, it depends, which is the most annoying answer, but I'll say a little bit more on what it
depends
on.
But often the most truthful answer, honestly.
Right, that, like, we have the moral level of this question, we have the ethical level of this question, we have the spiritual and the philosophical, we have the relational element. There's so many pieces here to consider. The simplest thing that I can say is for people to ask themselves, who is the disclosure for? Right. And what work and support are you willing to do on the other end of it? Right. I think people focus very much on the moment of the share and are not actually thinking about the surrounding pieces. So am I sharing this for myself? Right. To clear my conscience, to, you know, do some kind of repair on this relationship because I'm living without integrity or dishonestly, right? And how will I support my partner and my relationship in the repair on the other end? Am I doing this for them in some way?
Yeah.
And what makes me believe that this would help something, right? And that could be the right answer. I don't know what the right answer without mm-hmm. knowing more of the story is, but I really want people to be intentional about their relationships as much as possible.
That's well put. I want to read this comment from David. Mm-hmm. I knew we were going to get one of these, and it's important to address
yes,
it.
Yes,
David says, cheating is probably common because monogamy is not natural to our species. A great ape in many ways, like the bonobo. Marriage is a manufactured custom and law that doesn't comport with our species' biological nature. That is, in some ways, the premise of White Lotus Season 2. And I won't spoil it all for you, but it kind of, this is the HBO show, and the second season, the conclusion you draw from the end is that actually monogamy may not be natural, and cheating can actually help heal a relationship because it becomes an outlet for people's mm-hmm. frustrations and emotions. Justin, do you think there's any truth to that, that there actually, if you can work through it the right way and build the right level of trust, there can be something healing about an affair?
Right. So it's a great question. And just to back up for one second, you know, what do people who have cheated say that they have done in that case? Like, do they disclose it or not? We find in our Kinsey Institute research that about 1 in 5 people, men and women, say that they've cheated before. And the vast majority, 76%, said they tried to conceal it or hide it from yeah. their partner in some way, right? So people do try to keep this secret. But sometimes, despite their best efforts to keep it secret, it still comes out, right? And so what happens in the aftermath of an affair? And what we see in the data and research is that it's pretty split in terms of the outcomes, you know, roughly 50-50 who are staying together versus breaking up. And among those who are staying together, there's a percentage of them who do find a way to move past it in a healthy way, where their relationship ultimately becomes stronger in the end. So there is some truth to that idea that a relationship can become stronger through the resolution to infidelity. It doesn't mean that it's easy. Like, that path is hard for people to do. But if it results in improved communication in the relationship and getting on the same page about your values and building up and reestablishing trust and respect and intimacy and all those other things in your relationship, it can come out stronger through that trauma.
I think about all the work that has to be done, but and I also think about that couple from the Coldplay concert and how public that was. And so, Shadeen, I wonder, is it harder when more people know about it? Or I wonder, like, how the audience, not the audience.
It's a good question.
The audience of who knows that this infidelity happened, how does that affect the healing process?
I appreciate that you use the word audience in particular, because there is something about our relationships that do become performative.
Yep.
We have our public face and then we have our private face. And if we have a supportive and encouraging audience, then it facilitates at least us continuing to do our best to do this project well, right? If we are surrounded by people who are ridiculing us, who are in contempt towards one or both of us, who are shaming us, who are embarrassing us, it makes it so much harder for us to do the repair work, because I'm actually having to work on many relationships at once without the safety of a community to do it in, right? So if I choose to stay in this relationship where I've experienced betrayal, either as the person who was betrayed or on the other side, right? That if everyone in my community is like, well, why are you still together?
Yep.
You should break up. You should leave. It's just so much more difficult to stay, right? And on the other side, if you're like, I think this is over for one reason or another, and everyone's like, no, you should stay together and work on this,
yeah.
right? It doesn't actually allow us the space that we need to come to our own authentic decision.
That's a good point, because the audience, as Cherry put it, isn't always sending us the same message depending on the context. And it does, that impulse to save face must be so difficult to overcome for people if that pressure is really bearing down. I do want to talk a little bit more about something that we mentioned early on, Justin, which is all these different definitions of infidelity and cheating. And when I read through some of them, I started to think, wait a second, it does feel like some people almost just think you can't have a meaningful relationship with anyone outside of your main partner, mm-hmm. an intellectual, mm-hmm. emotional relationship with anybody. Just now I'm reading between the lines of the surveys, but like, do you think that that kind of exists somewhere in our society? The idea that basically you're only allowed to be close to one person, and that closeness with other people is in essence a form of betrayal.
Yeah, I mean, our expectations for relationships and marriage have changed a lot over time. And the value, function, purpose of marriage has changed too. But in today's world, people are expecting their spouse to be everything to them, to be the best sexual partner that they ever have, to be their best friend, for their partner to meet any and all needs they're going to have. And that's a lot of expectation to put on one person. But it also means that when we're expecting so much of them, that if they do something like share a secret with somebody else or spend time with somebody else or follow an attractive person on social media, like suddenly all of these things can come to be seen as cheating. And I think as our world expands and technology becomes a bigger part of our everyday lives, we're just seeing that the definition of cheating continues to grow and expand because more things become red lines that you can now cross that start to become perceived as betrayals in the relationship.
And Justin, I have a follow-up for you, and it kind of relates to that last comment you read about non-monogamy. And I wonder how many people sort of exercise or decide to participate in ethical non-monogamy. Are people really sort of leaning there and making that a real option in their relationships? And is there drama if you decide to do that?
Great question. So in nationally representative surveys, we see that about 1 in 5 adults in North America have been in a sexually open relationship at some point before. But
so
only
one
about
in five one again?
One in five have done it at some point. 1 in 20 are currently in some type of non-monogamous relationship. So, you know, lifetime experience, it's bigger than you think, but not that many people are currently in a consensually non-monogamous relationship. And what I can say based on the research and data is that there actually aren't any differences in relationship satisfaction between monogamous and consensually non-monogamous people. And I think it's because in any relationship structure, you're just trading one set of challenges for another, right? So yeah, there can be drama in non-monogamous relationships, but there can be a heck of a lot of drama in monogamous relationships too, you know? So any relationship is challenging, whether it's open or not.
And Shadeen, I always think I'm just not that evolved. I'm not that evolved because it seems like you have to, it takes a lot of communication and a lot of honesty to be able to navigate one of those non-monogamous relationships. I don't know if you've seen that in your work.
Yes, that is true. And it's the same level of honesty and communication that we would actually benefit from in any level of intimate relationship, monogamous or otherwise. And that is some of the rub. The challenge is in a non-monogamous relationship, you have to do it more often with more people. And so as we think about even, you know, the comment, I want to amplify, you know, the sentiment that, oh, some of this is not natural. I really want to amplify like that felt sense of a lot of people around like, this is so hard. This is so hard. Relationships, intimacy, building is so hard. And we don't actually have a good roadmap or framework for it. We have lots of rules and lots of expectations. And sure, we have high-level guidelines and frameworks, but our world continues to change and evolve at a pace that's so hard to keep up with. And so there's so many opportunities for disappointments and for betrayals, even when unintended.
Yeah. And I wonder if this is an opportunity, though, for people in relationships. People saw this video and you say, hey, you know, if you've never had the conversation about what cheating is in your relationship or you haven't talked through some things, what would be a roadmap to have that conversation, Shadeen?
Yeah. And this is part of why story is so good. And I think that's part of why we continue to, you know, watch the car crash on the road or watch this video of the kiss cam. It's because it's also opening up cultural dialogue and maybe even relationship dialogue. What would you do? Here's what I would do. How do you feel about this? These external presentations are often safer, air quotes, entry points into what could be tender conversation, because many of us have had the experience of being betrayed. So this isn't always an easy thing to talk about in your relationship around how are you feeling, You know, are there things that we haven't talked about that we should? How would I know if you are dissatisfied? And where might you go? Right? That these are tender conversations, but they are important if we're saying that we want to maintain our own personal integrity, but also keep a level of transparency in our relationship that allows us to trust one another.
Yeah.
Akram says, as a gay man, I want to vent about how truly exhausting it was to find partners who were interested in monogamous relationships. It's almost a precursor to be okay with open relationships in 2025. So maybe something's changing, but as we start to wrap up here real quick, just like your guys' 30-second advice for what to do if you find yourself in this situation, whether you cheated or were cheated on, like sort of that first gut check thing to do as you try to move forward with your relationship and your life. I'll start with you, Justin, and then you, Shadeen, in 30 seconds each.
Well, I wish that we would have these conversations before infidelity
happened. Yes, agreed. Okay, so, good starting point.
So in our survey, we asked people, do you think infidelity is preventable? And 80% said yes. And 60% said the best way to prevent infidelity is to have open communication in your relationship. So what I would like to say is, let's start just in relationships, normalizing. Let's define what cheating is, what our boundaries are, and get on the same page about that. Because if we never discuss these things, it just opens the door to bigger crises happening later on.
Yeah. Shadeen?
I will amplify all of that and add that in the immediate aftermath, what happens next is really important. And so if we need quick shorthand, I invite people to think about what they do in other kinds of crises around a wound, right? You stop the bleeding. So how do we pause right here, freeze frame here? We don't escalate or do a whole bunch of things. You stop for a moment. You clean the wound. So what's the mess here?
Yeah.
And then we move into protection and healing.
Yeah,
great advice. So I want to first thank our guests, Shadeen Francis, marriage and family therapist, board certified sex therapist. Shadeen, thanks so much for the time today.
Thank you.
And same to you, Justin Lay Miller, senior research fellow at the Kinsey Institute and host of the podcast Sex and Psychology. Thanks so much, Justin.
It's a pleasure.
Yes, and our DJs of the day are Edward and Garolyn, appropriately a couple, and their pick, which you're starting to hear, is Lipstick on Your Collar by Connie Francis, the singer, a New Jersey native, died last week at the age of 87. Wow, let's listen.
Studio 2 is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Marie Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Diana Martinez and Tina Calique engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. Joan Isabella is our audio general manager. I am Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Thanks for listening.